Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the Tamron Learning Podcast, where host Dr. Kirby Ross-Plock speaks with experts on many topics relevant in the ultra-high net worth family wealth management space. Kirby is author of several books, including The Complete Family Office Handbook, and shares her expertise consulting with families and family offices. Kirby is also the founder of Tamron Learning, an online wealth education platform that develops practical, foundational learning programs for beneficiaries to help them prepare for responsible stewardship of wealth.
Welcome to the Tamron Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirby Ross-Plock, and today I'm thrilled to be talking about family banks with a leading expert in the field. Today we have Warner Babcock, who has been a successful family business CEO, board member, family council member, and a trustee of many family trusts controlling family businesses, investments, and special needs trusts. Warner also built three successful businesses on his own, one in manufacturing and two in service companies. Prior to co-founding NIFEC in 2014. In 2010, he began teaching family business courses to undergraduates and MBA students as an adjunct faculty member at SUNY's Baruch College. He's an FFI fellow, NACD governance fellow, and a member of Attorneys for Family Held Enterprises. Mr. Babcock has published articles in Accounting Today, Family Business Magazine, Trust and Estates, and been featured in the New York Times about family banks and intrafamily financing. Mr. Babcock also holds an MBA degree from Emory, so we are thrilled to have Warner here today. And I also personally feel connected to Warner because my family heritage namesake is Babcock, a very unusual surname. So on this day, it's especially wonderful to have you here, Warner, and I'm talking about the topic that we love so much, which is family banks.
Well, thank you, Kirby, and I'm very excited about sharing our thoughts, with people who are interested in helping the next generation. So this is one of the most exciting topics I'm very passionate about. So,
fantastic. Well, let's kind of get into it, and maybe we can just start with the basic, which is, you know, what exactly is a family bank? Because I don't know that, you know, I can't make the assumption that everybody has experienced one, but obviously you wrote in the Complete Family Office Handbook both the first and second chapters on family banks. So I think this is a great opportunity just to socialize. So let's start there.
So a family bank is really a structure or process for families, to fund other family members, and the funding comes from the families. And it's really used primarily for as a resource, and it's not just for financial purposes, but also it is to help build human capital. And in the long run, this is a holistic approach, which is something where a family bank can play a real key role. And especially with having an emphasis on wealth creators rather than wealth users. And but there are a lot of problems associated with intrafamily financing. So the whole idea of a family bank, and in many cases you want to set up an entity, is to bring some discipline to it. So, that's what the family bank does, among other things.
Well, that's actually a great segue kind of for my next question. I know in the book chapters, you've discussed a lot about how different, right, families might approach a family bank. You actually tease out sort of two different concepts, one on a hard bank versus a soft bank. Can you just share more your thoughts on how they vary?
Sure. So really, if you look at different families, there's some families that are very financially oriented and investment oriented, and where they get their most pleasure in life is to have a lot of capital in terms of financial capital. And some of their metrics they use for measuring success is more oriented towards financial success. So when you look at a family bank, we really call that, a hard bank in terms of the way it's structured and setting up goals and objectives and engaging and supporting the next generation to achieve those financial goals. When it comes to on the other end of the spectrum, families who are really most interested in having the next generation or future generations develop their own human capital. And that could be, everything from behavior to, having their personal passions achieved and so forth, and to really develop into, full people when it comes to people skills and all the other different things that have to do with the non-financial capital. And those banks are structured a little bit different, where the metrics and the goals are set up to help advance the next generation towards those sort of softer issues. So I think, those are both extremes, but when you put together a family bank, many times it's best to think about how do you balance those two things, which you can achieve both, but in different degrees. And so that we try to classify, just for the sake of terminology and orientation, these two different types of banks, hard bank and soft bank.
I love it. Yeah, no, I think it's really helpful because what I'm hearing you say is that a hard bank might have more structure, more policies that are financially driven, more based on the bottom line. Right. And not to say that a soft bank doesn't have those as well, but the emphasis or maybe the purpose of why you set one up, there might be slightly different expectations on how a family member engages and works with the bank, what things that might be funded, what are the expectations on the return of capital, and the stringent nature of, returning capital in a certain time frame, those sorts of things. So, maybe we should go one step deeper and just talk about how that evolution process happens, where families start, and then sort of how they evolve over time.
Well, I always like to start in talking about family banks, for those who haven't been through this, is to start small and actually early on to develop one's own, characteristics and personal development in having a sense of responsibility, accountability, and so forth. So you can easily do that by providing small, simple loans. And you can set up a structure or not set up a structure, but the idea is to start small and simple and, develop something that works for your family. And the next one is to try to look as the individuals grow, something a little bit more complicated and more meaningful and complex. And that might be a longer term loan towards some project, or, it could even be something else that, the family wants to do, or the family member wants to do in terms of a new venture in college or something like that. And then from that, a family, if they're already familiar with, in fact, direct equity investments, or they're later in life and more sophisticated in terms of investments, and there's an interest in applying families' capital to other ventures or internal ventures and so forth, they can take on something more complex like a direct equity oriented family bank. And then as time goes on, and this gets really much more complicated and sophisticated, but there are many family businesses that are used to operating companies and understand how they work, both not only the financial part, but also the governance and everything else, and market share, acquisitions, and so forth, and just all the different things that go into operating businesses, that they can get into bringing that core competency into engaging in larger complex transactions, whether they be real estate or manufacturing companies or even financial products or something like that. So those kind of family banks set up with those, types of complex transactions and activities will require a lot more in going into setting up the family bank itself to meet that complexity. So the idea here is to start small, simple over time, work towards the goal, and it may be just, you know, long-term loans, but if it does go all the way to complex transactions, make sure that it's well thought out rather than just jumping into that with pretty lofty expectations that might get you into trouble.
Wise advice. I mean, I think that brings us to the genesis. I mean, where people typically start, and what are some of the best practices on getting started setting up a family bank? Because again, I think there is no clear roadmap, and oftentimes families are borrowing from insights from other families, you know, from counselors and experts like yourself. And tell us a little bit more about what you've seen work well. I know you've got five principles too that sometimes can help.
Right. So I think, you know, with families that have runoff, and I like to take the little side story here for a second, and let's say the parents want to do something really terrific for the next generation, and they spend a lot of time with their attorneys and accountants and so forth and advisors and form a family bank and then announce it to the family. Although there may be a lot of excitement for that type of thing, that can easily get you into trouble because it may be misaligned with those who are going to be receivers of this wonderful gift, if you will. So this is why I think one of the top principles among the five is to democratize the process, and that is open it up, engage the next generation early, educate them about the benefits, the disadvantages, and be very realistic about the risks. I mean, a successful family bank in its initial structure and goals and documentation policies, you know, could be looking very good, but in the end, the family member might find that the experience has been great, but there, you know, there's some reputational risk and confidence risks that could result in really affecting the individual for the life. So the idea is to help educate everybody about all these different issues and, you know, include some principles, you know, with developing a healthy bank system, much like a family business system, is a great, great early step. And then spend time and be patient, don't rush it, and have the family members' interests, needs, and the options and all these sort of things on the table. You know, this is all under active communication and a good exchange and so forth over time. And everybody in the family may be in different stages of life and risk profile, and that includes maybe their spouses and so forth. So these are not things to be taken lightly. And then develop the actual system. Try to memorialize in some form the value, the mission, the vision, objectives, and goals of the family bank, whether it's a hard bank or soft bank or the combination thereof, and then bringing family governance, how decisions are made. You know, if it's an LLC or C Corp or something like that, you know, that's going to have some kind of governance. And then if it's going to be driven by trusts and trustees and so forth, making sure everybody's on the same page and understanding how decisions are made. But also provide independent oversight, have some outside family members, you know, be involved in this to take some of the emotion out of some of the key decisions. And then developing some kind of policies and processes. If more funding is required, or the venture or whatever their funding is not working out well, how do you work that out? How much do you take into account that things are going to fail? And that, you know, if they fail, you know, are you going to be hard about it, or are you going to be actually using it as a learning experience and helping them along? And then you really want a group of advisors to make sure that the legal entity, the tax issues, and some of the, you know, let's say joint decision-making processes are in good shape, and you're getting good advice so that, you know, when you kick off the family bank, you know, it's something that's well thought out, and you don't get yourself into tax problems And you don't get yourself into some situation where you can't unwind it easily if it needs to be unwound. Yeah, so.
Those are great. Thank you, Warner. That's really helpful just to kind of walk through the beginning stages, because I get asked that a lot about, okay, we're conceiving this, but we don't really know where to begin the process. And I love that you brought in one of the principles, democratize, because oftentimes great ideas like this might be driven by one generation and not necessarily fully embracing the stakeholders that it's trying to enfranchise. So I think it's really powerful to vet the concept with those that you're hoping are applying for loans or potentially cash infusions of equity into enterprises or things at the building, so that you don't run down the track and realize that some of the cars on the train were left back at the station.
Right.
So I think that's really, really helpful. Tell us a little bit more about when you think a family business bank works the best. I mean, when does it really seem to fit into a family office structure or an enterprising kind of family?
So I'd like to start by saying first, if your family is, a bit, let's say, undeveloped or dysfunctional in terms of not having good relationships and don't work together and so forth, that's not something that you should look upon at the family bank to bring everybody together and solve that problem. So I'd be very careful about, going forward with a family that doesn't seem to be there yet. So when a family bank is set up and the expectations for it to work out well are understood, then I think we've got the social, intellectual, and financial parts of the family working well. The goal is really clearly focused on the next generation and their passions, and that the roles and responsibilities are very much understood and well defined, and there's clear accountability, and then there's a lot of trust. And it just doesn't mean on the trust on the front side and respect, and there's good understanding of the purpose of the family bank, but it's something that, throughout the process of the family bank formation and thereafter, that is always kept in mind, that you're reinforcing those aspects, that there's respect and trust and so forth. You do not want a family bank left in the hands of a trustee or two trustees or over dominating really feel empowered and not listening and so forth. So, again, you want to be, think about democratizing as being a very important part. And then family banks don't work out sometimes, and neither do some of the ventures or ideas that the family members want to undertake, that they've gotten some money from the family. And so there should be considered efforts to determining what should you do, what should be done up front to structure the bank or any deal, if you will, in terms of its exit or you're dissolving it. A lot of people go into deals and don't think about that, but that's really, really important. And it's also how to monetize if there is a goal to do that beyond just flipping an asset, but more, somebody wants to get out of the family, out of their venture, So, and the other part is, succession planning, transition planning is really important, because if you go into a family bank, a lot of effort goes into forming it and to helping it succeed through one generation. But once it gets up and running and it does well, there should be some really good thought about how does it pass on to transition on to the next generation. And so the governance should be in place, but also all the other things that go into, preparing the, successors and so forth, much like a family business. And that goes for the trustees as well as, other people who are making decisions and how the next generation is going to be using the family bank. So in that, you want to flexibilize the family bank so it can be adjusted over time and so forth. And then lastly, if there's not good tax legal advice I mentioned before, or tax and estate planning, or even investment advice along for another round, if you will, or another set of funding and reviewing the documents, and maybe you bring in a bank for loans and so forth. But if these things are not really well thought out, they can trip up a family bank easily. So those are the kinds of things that you want to make sure that they're considered well.
These are great insights, and thank you so much. I'm so grateful to call you a peer, a friend, esteemed colleague. You know, Warner Babcock you've done so much for our field. So it's great to share your wisdom on family banks. Of course, you write a lot more in chapter 13. So for anyone who wants to hear more of Warner's thoughts, we co-authored Family Entrepreneurship and Family Banks and the Complete Family Office Handbook. So there's a lot more you can download there. Warner, thanks so much for being on the Tamron Learning Podcast today. It's been great having you here.
Great. Thank you, Kirby, and I enjoy it. And I would recommend reading the book. There's five other additional principles, or five principles in there that will really help guide you through the process too. So thank you, Kirby.